happy Saturday morning to you all, wherever you happen to be today. I hope it's a great Saturday morning. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I am Rob Hall, Beth Guckenberger.
We're right in the heart of summer.
We are in the heart of summer.
I think our listeners are probably nicely tanned. I think that...
What kind of assumptions do you make about people do?
I'm thinking they have spent some time in the summer. Hopefully many of them have already been on their summer vacations.
My dear father-in-law,
yes,
who I loved dearly, passed away a few years ago, he would rather have done anything on the planet other than work at getting a tan.
Really?
Oh, my gosh.
Anything on the planet.
I mean, I think, like, you'd smell the beach and he'd turn the other way.
Oh.
I mean, he was not a beach going tan getting guy.
I mean, so your assumption
that maybe people are dead in the heat of summer and they want to sit in the basement.
I don't
have any idea.
Well, you know what? I'm sad for you because you're missing out on the vitamin D that awaits you.
That is true. A little vitamin D.
It is just, I mean, I know we should make some warnings right now, but please use sunscreen when you're outside in the sun.
Public
service announcement.
Public service announcement, that's right.
But I do like summertime. I think, you know, this summer we're not going to get a chance to go on a family vacation, but we are taking a road trip. I'm taking a road trip.
Yes, you are. You're road tripping home.
I'm driving across the country with my children, and I'm thinking about making sure that we never eat at a chain restaurant, that we only eat at mom-and-pop restaurants for the 4 days it will take us to get home.
Wow, really?
That's my thought. That's my idea. And I was also thinking about never taking an interstate, but then I thought, from Mexico to Ohio, that might take us a while.
Well, number one, that should be a rule only when you get to the United States.
Okay.
And even then, that would make your 4 or 5 day trip much longer.
Okay, you're right.
But you would have success finding a lot of mom and pop places.
I mean, I kind of like, it's been 16 years since I've lived in the United States. I'm thinking I'm due for a little Americana.
There's like a book and a whole PBS thing about, I think, like the Blue Roads or something like
Route 66?
No. But I'm dating myself. That was like 25 years ago or something. And the guy traveled the United States on the secondary roads instead of the highways. And so on maps, those are designated as blue.
Hmm.
So he did a whole thing about the blue roads. So you didn't even know.
You
were going to do second generation
the blue roads. I think we should do it. I can broadcast live. Hey, everybody. I'm in Texarkana, halfway between Dallas and Nashville.
I'm at Billy Joe's Bakery for a little breakfast.
I'm getting a little special.
Billy Joe, come on over here.
I know. I think that'd be like a reality TV show right there.
That would be an interesting series of shows.
Okay, well. You heard it first here. Road trips.
I mean, really, like on a regular Saturday morning sort of 5-minute deal. Regular folk. How did you get into the whatever you're doing?
The donut business.
That would be cool.
How did you?
Good luck with that road trip. I'm glad I won't be on it.
What was your very first road trip? Like you and
My
a friend?
My very first? Oh, like as... As like yeah. as a sort of a pseudo adult.
Yeah, I mean, yes, exactly.
Pseudo adult.
You were not the passenger. You could have legally driven.
My first road trip. I was a freshman in college, University of Cincinnati. And
the first time you were a freshman or second time?
Yeah, okay, that's a whole other story. I was a freshman actually 3 times, but hey.
Anyway, it
worked out in the end.
Focus.
Yes, not one of my proudest parts, and my mom just tries to gloss over that part of my life. But this would give you a reason why I was a freshman more than once.
Continue, Dr. Hall.
So I went to the University of Cincinnati, and so I met some dudes on the floor, right? People I hadn't known very long. They're like, we are going to New Orleans.
Oh.
So I'm in Cincinnati. So that's a pretty
decent
drive.
Everything inside of you should have said, bad idea.
Oh, yeah, but that's why I was a freshman more than once, because my first response was, yes, let's do this. And to make matters worse, we were going to do it in a weekend.
Okay.
So it's just like a regular week. It's like mid-October, and you got class. And so we're leaving after class on Friday.
Yes.
And we're driving to New Orleans, and we're going to come back on Sunday, so we're back for class on Monday.
Yes.
This is just a bad idea from the start.
Yes.
We went in a Ford Fiesta, which is smaller than the room I'm sitting in right now. So 4 of us in a Ford Fiesta, no hotel reservations.
No seatbelts.
I went to New Orleans and back for $80. We slept on the beach in Biloxi, Mississippi. We went to New Orleans for a day. Did the whole, you know, Bourbon Street, here we are, all that kind of stuff. About 4 o'clock on Sunday morning, after being awake most of the day, we hopped back in the Ford Fiesta and drove home.
That is ridiculous.
It was. You look back now, like if my son were to tell me he did that, my son's going to be a freshman at University of Kentucky next year. And if he were to tell me, hey, Dad, this is what we're going to – I'd say, Charlie, there is no way on the planet you're doing that. But
You forgot to ask.
Yes. Well, I knew not to ask. So that was my first road trip, the Ford Fiesta trip to New Orleans in 2 days.
Oh.
There's not a pleasant memory about it at all.
None. Oh.
I mean, just the adventure of it, but I mean, sleeping on the beach, we got kicked off the beach. Oh. You're being in New Orleans and you're just totally tired.
It's a good story.
It's a good story. That's the only redeeming part is that I have a story to tell about my first road trip.
There is something scary about this, as you called it, the pseudo-adult on that road trip. Yeah. I mean,
yes, I was a pseudo-adult for
I
sure.
Remember we took at my first road trip, pseudo-adult, I think I was probably 18 or 19. And like I took a picture with my camera of the speedometer over 100 miles an hour.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I wanted to show my
Listen
family.
Listen to you.
And
you wanted to show your family.
Isn't that weird?
I hey, know, Dad.
Again with the pseudo
Check
part.
Out my picture. I'm going over 100 miles an hour.
And Golly, my friend didn't know how to drive a stick shift, and I was driving a stick shift, and we had some people sleep in the back seat, and I didn't want to pull over and wake them up. So we traded. I got into fifth gear.
No.
We traded places. I know. These are not our proudest moments. Listeners, stick with us. We're going to go
That's
nowhere
right.
but up from
children,
here.
Children, if you have children in the car, teenagers in the car, these are bad ideas.
We have grown and matured since then,
oh
and we're going to talk about really important things this,
yes,
this show.
Yes, we're not going to be talking about dumb things we did as teenagers.
And can
that
I mention,
not...
my road trip is as a missionary from one country to the next this week.
That's right. As an adult, and it's going to be
a learning curve.
You're talking about stopping at mom and pop diners.
And
That's
I'll share the gospel. On there.
That's the adventure of it. What kind of food can we get as compared to I'm going over 100 miles an hour and switching on the go.
No. Bad
that,
ideas.
That is very okay. Very, okay, so we do have a good show.
Wear
we,
sunscreen, put your seatbelt on,
that's
and don't
right.
drive fast.
That's right.
Here we are.
All
real
of those,
life
all of those
Rob.
Things, the advice for road trips
yes.
from Real Life with Beth and Rob. Those
Who's
are
on today? Come on,
things.
Come on. Let's keep
so,
raising the level.
Cynthia Rookte is going to be on. She's written a really interesting book. It's called Ragged Hope. She engages her readers to cling to hope no matter what. And so there's just some really kind of gritty stories. Mm-hmm. And again, if you're looking for good books to read that are about real, true life stories and have a little grit to them and you want to get involved in that, this is your kind of read.
I think one thing that drew me to that book at first is it talks about, I think the subtitle talks about how other
surviving the fallout of other people's choices.
Right. And as someone who's worked with orphans my whole life, that's all I deal with are people who have kind of these torn apart storylines because of things other people did, not even they themselves. And so I'm curious how she talks to folks who are also.
And then after the bottom of the hour break, it will kind of go PG-13. So
yes,
just a fair warning to if you're driving around today or if you got kids hanging out with you for breakfast or whatever you're doing on this Saturday morning. After the break, we're going to be talking about something that we talk about relatively often, and that's sexual exploitation, sexual trafficking. And so Mary Frances Bowley is going to be with us. She's written a book called White Umbrella. She is the director, I believe, of a group called Wellspring Living that really devotes its time. And this is a U.S. story. This is
a
U.S.
I was just going to say, the thing that's
This
different.
Is not a story about India. This is not a story about what we talk about. This is about sexual exploitation and trafficking in the United States.
That's exactly right. Chilling accounts.
That's right. So the White Umbrella and her experiences leading Wellspring Living. So, again, just like the last couple of weeks, two totally different kind of ideas, two compelling stories.
Something for everyone today on Real Life with Beth and Rob.
You would think so. And so, again, if we're hoping to inspire conversations amongst people for the rest of their Saturday or their week or whatever, today is another perfect example. And if you're going on a road trip, you could read these books. You
download
could,
the podcast.
You could do any of those things.
You could do several hours of
you
Real
would
Life
have
with
much,
Beth and Rob.
You would have much better things to talk about and to think about
we
than
want to introduce
the
you.
Kinds of things that we were talking about just a few minutes
That's
ago.
That's exactly right.
We want to introduce you to a redemptive, fun-filled, beautiful road trip, not a switching drivers at 100 miles an hour
no,
road
bad,
trip.
No, bad,
like
bad choice.
Beth
bad choice. Thank
Guckenberger.
You, Jesus, for saving my life in
yes,
the midst of
that,
that poor
was a,
choice.
Just a horrible idea. So anyway, we hope you come back. We're going to talk with Cynthia about her book, Ragged Hope, Surviving the Fallout of Other People's Choices, when we get back. And again,
stick around.
Yeah, we hope you're having a great Saturday morning.
The sun is shining.
Yeah, absolutely. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall. That's Beth Guckenberger. We'll see you back here in like 60 seconds.
This past summer, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to India, where I met a little girl named Shailaja from an orphanage with back-to-back. She was a new child at the home and was having a hard time adjusting. As I began playing with her and painting her nails, I was reminded that this little girl was just like my sisters back at home in the United States. Instead of a face on a photo, she became a part of my family when I realized that I could continue to help her through Back2Back's child sponsorship program. Even though she lives over 8,000 miles away, through the Back2Back sponsorship program, I can ensure that her spiritual, physical, educational, emotional, and social needs are met. The best part about the program is when I come home from school and find a letter from Shilajah. I am so thankful for God working within both of our hearts in order to lead us closer to each other and closer to Him. Visit www.backtoback.org for more information.
Hey, welcome back. Happy Saturday morning to you, wherever you happen to be. Real Life with Beth and Rob. And I'm Rob Hall. That's Beth Kuchenberger. Beth, how are you?
I am doing really good. Happy Saturday to you and to all of our listeners out there this morning.
You know what? I don't know what it is. Maybe it's July, maybe whatever, but I'm full of energy.
You're
today.
Happy.
I'm happy. I'm loving the summer months.
Let's all enjoy it, folks.
All of that kind of stuff. Hey, we got a really great guest that's going to be on right now. She's accomplished a lot of stuff. She's an author.
Yeah.
She's had 33 years on the air storytelling through the heartbeat of the home radio broadcast. She's written all kinds of genres of books. We're going to be talking about her latest book called Ragged Hope, Surviving the Fallout of Other People's Choices. Cynthia Rookde is with us this morning. So, Cynthia, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Good morning. Good morning. It's great to be here.
Well, excellent, excellent. What is really kind of compelling about this book, and Beth and I were talking about it, knowing that you were coming on, is this is not only a hopeful, you know, ragged hope about, you know, a struggle in your life that comes on from some circumstance that you've created, but this is kind of a different angle. This is about overcoming other people's choices.
True, that was the point of it. We oftentimes hear about the headline makers who have tremendous disappointing moral failures, or they make a bad choice and they're paying consequences for it. But we seldom hear about the stories from the heart of the people who are bearing the consequences of what other people have done. And this book is a book full of stories that from their own voices, in a sense. It's told in storytelling form so that we can really get at the heart of the emotions and the fallout that they bear every day from someone else's choices and how it's affected their life, either for a season or, in some cases, for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
Cynthia, I'm curious, was there one story out of the 26 that was just like your catalyst story, that when you heard it, you thought, I've got to write this down, and then from it built the rest of the book? Is there one story that means something more to you than the others?
Thank you for asking that. I believe they all have a very tender place in my heart, and even having to cull from all the stories I've heard down to these 26, which are, in some cases, compilations of several people's stories built into one in order to protect privacy and issues mm-hmm. like that. Some of these people are still going through the struggles that that caused mm-hmm. the story to be mm-hmm. written in the first place. There are a couple of them that are especially dear to my heart or near to my heart. One of them in particular is the story of a woman who is trying to locate a new home to live in and goes with her realtor to try to find a place to live, but the parameters are so small because her husband's going to be released from prison, and the conditions of his release include that he can't be within 150 feet of an elementary school, they can't be close to a playground, they can't be close to this, and so this woman is even having to choose a home, giving up her previous home and having to choose a place to live that everything is dictated by her husband's previous choices. He's paid his penalty. He's going to be free. But there are still going to be consequences for the rest of their lives for his poor decisions in those what would have been years prior. So that's one of them that really resonates in my heart as seeing not just the embarrassment of the situation, not just the consequences that they've paid mm-hmm. and the struggles in their relationship, but also how day-to-day life is so changed by a decision that is made. In this particular case with the family that I was writing about, the husband was repentant. He's come to a place of having such a strong walk with the Lord. That part is all so beautiful, but it doesn't remove or erase the fact that day to day there are things that are going to be different forever.
You know, in stories like this, and it certainly comes out in your book, a recurrent emotion, a recurrent theme is bitterness. When somebody has done something to us or we're living through the consequences of somebody else's action, mm-hmm. bitterness is often the result. And so I know you talk about it in the book, but what would you say to our listeners today about that? What is the best thing to do for someone as the result of someone else's choices who's kind of stuck there?
Many times we think that we can work our way out of bitterness, or else we kind of get stuck in that place, as you say. We kind of get mired down by the quicksand of it, of the bitterness that keeps eating away at us. And we know very well from everything we've read and from what God's Word tells us that the bitterness doesn't affect the other person. It affects us. It destroys our ability to be able to cope. Mm. It really paralyzes us in our ability to move forward, either in the relationship or even just within our own lives, too. And we know very well, too, that the lecture method really doesn't work very well in overcoming bitterness, whether someone's lecturing us about how to get over it or whether we're trying to lecture the
right.
other person so that we can get through it. But we do know that the heat lamp of God's love can melt things that seem stony hard. And he talks in his word about melting that stony heart, his ability to do that, changing that heart to a heart of flesh. So there's a real key element of this, which is part of surrender. It seems like surrender keeps coming up all the time in the life of someone who wants to live God's way. But there's such peace in that, and God knew there would be. So when we come to a place where we realize this bitterness isn't helping me, it's hurting me, and it's incapacitating me for what I need to do to move on, we start to realize that this is ineffective. Why will I hang on to this if it's going to be ineffective in my life and just make it more difficult to do what I have to do to cope? That's part of the key, I believe.
Mm-hmm. When you were interviewing the, I'm sure, many more than 26 folks, and for them to share the intimate details of the stories of their lives, mm-hmm. you know, they had to have been motivated by something. What did you find was their greatest motivation or the message they wanted your readers to get from their stories?
Many of these stories have come to me over the years of listening and being willing to listen past what that first reaction is when you say, how are you doing? If the answer is fine, but you can detect there's a little something behind that word fine, listening mm-hmm. past that and to be able to hear the true heart of what's going on there in their lives is really huge. But most of these people who have given me permission to share their stories have seen the value of using their own pain to bless somebody else, and in that way it lends it a dignity that it didn't have before. If I can take mm-hmm. my story, or you can take your story, and in the sharing of it somebody else finds a little handhold of hope, then all of a sudden what I've been through is given a dignity it didn't have before. It's given some people would say a purpose, but purpose seems so clinical, and in some ways it seems like, look, I'm not going through this so that you can benefit it. But the end result is that in God's economy, he does that all the time. He lets us take a peek at other people's stories so that we can learn from them and grow through them, so we can be stronger and our own spirits can be fortified when we fight our own fights. And every one of these dear, dear people who allowed their stories to be told had at least a little bit of that at the heart of their willingness to share their story and have it go public in some senses. They want to know that God can use it in a way to help somebody else.
We're talking with Cynthia Rukti about her book, Ragged Hope, Surviving the Fallout of Other People's Choices. I imagine it's available on Amazon, and you certainly Google it. It's definitely worth finding.
You know, Cynthia, a verse that's meant a lot to me over the years is found in Jeremiah, and it says, the NAS translation says, when you can extract the precious from the worthless, then you can be my spokesman. And I was thinking about that verse. Yeah, it's a beautiful verse. When you were talking in the first chapter about Lila, and you said, you talk about glory moments, like that idea that in the midst of something that's worthless or ugly, as you write, or hard, you know, it's just pointless to pretend like it isn't worthless or hard. I mean, as Christians, we do walk through hard things. We're not immune. We don't get a free pass out of those. But that in the midst of that, there can be something precious we can take out. There can be a glory moment. Would you describe for our listeners a little bit about what a glory moment is?
Sometimes it's as small a thing as seeing evidence that God is still here in the middle of how horrible it is, whatever the situation. One of the stories in the book is about a young bride who, I think it was just 3 months into their marriage, and her husband went out drinking and driving and got into an accident and severed his spine. And in a moment's time, then she went from a new bride to being a full-time caregiver, and their marriage completely turned upside down. And she was having to walk through incredibly difficult things. But she reported also that there were moments of tenderness in the middle of that caregiving. Those were the glory moments. Those were the times where she could see evidence that God was still in the middle of this, no matter how hard it was or no matter how much it had cost. And, of course, both of them would want to have gone back to that moment in time where the decision was made for him to leave the house that night, and the decision was made for him to drink irresponsibly and to drive irresponsibly and all the consequences that came after that. They can't erase that. They can't go back in time and erase that. But they can find those little spots that are shining glory moments where God either reaches down and says, thank you for doing this, touches her on the shoulder in a sense, and says, thank you for the way you're serving your husband, even though he doesn't deserve it. That is such a picture. He doesn't deserve it because of his choice. He certainly deserves it because he's a child of God, and he's her husband, and her love for him and everything like that, and because he needed it. There was a time back in October when our own household had some situation, some crises that all came to bear on the same day. We had a kitchen fire, and my husband fell out of his hunting stand and broke his back and his femur, and I became a full-time caregiver for that time period, and we were doing fire remediation and all kinds of other problems and caregiving at the same time. He was practically helpless in the beginning of that, and as we worked through that ourselves, and we had to, in some ways, just hang on to the Lord and tough it out through some of the really difficult times. The glory moments for us were those precious times, like when my husband called me over to his side where he was lying on the couch because he couldn't be upright. And I sat on the footstool beside him, and he put his hand on my knee and prayed for me. Or the time when it was time for his bath, and I got the soapy water, and I threw the towel over my shoulder, and all of a sudden was transported into that moment where Jesus did that for his disciples. And what was just an ordinary task became this glory moment time where I realized I was ministering to my husband not just for two main reasons, because I loved him and because that's what he needed at the moment. And that's what Jesus does for us all the time.
Yeah. Cynthia, thanks so much for being on with us today. I hope people will be inspired to get the book. Some great stories. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, I thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Hey, we'll be back right after this break. Some more compelling stuff right after the break. You're listening to Real Life with Beth and Rob, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes. Join us then.
Do Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
If becoming or staying debt-free is important to you, you're not alone. 10 years ago, I was worried sick, overwhelmed with debt, and so tired of not having enough at the end of the month to make ends meet. I was working a full-time job, but getting deeper in debt every month, and I hated being away from my children. I finally said, that's enough, and I made a decision to do whatever it took to get free from the terrible debt that was causing me so much stress. I'm Gina Neef, and I want to invite you to find the same financial freedom that I found. Not only did I pay my way out of debt, I was also able to leave my corporate job and work from home and be completely available to my family. For years now, I've worked part-time hours, making more than a full-time job would ever pay. I remember the pain of being in over my head, and I'll never forget the joy of becoming debt-free. That's why I show others how to do the same. If you're ready to work from home and find financial freedom, then I'm eager to show you how. Go to findingfreedomnow.com. Discover how you can get free from debt. Go to findingfreedomnow.com.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Hey, welcome back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I am Rob Hall along with Beth Guckenberger. We hope you're having a fantastic Saturday wherever you happen to be. Good morning, Beth.
I think that wherever they happen to be is just exactly where God has them. I was just trying to be so positive,
got that little look in your eye that you get sometimes when you start to think sort of waxing eloquent kind of thoughts.
You know, I'm just here to say that wherever you are today, this is the day the Lord has made, although...
Okay, so that wasn't an encouragement to wax eloquent.
Okay, well, I just wanted to say that. I woke up this morning, listened to my favorite daily podcast. I listen to followtherabbi.com just about every morning.
Followtherabbi.com.
Bible teacher Ray Vanderlaan gets on and just shares his biblical insight from Jewish history and the historical context of, I listen to it. And
you, too, can follow followtherabbi.com.
I can't get enough of him. His voice has now become like comfort food to me. I go, oh, it's a new day. I get to learn more things. And I've been just excited, really, about the continual ways in which the Lord reveals himself to us who are here. I'm just going to say that out loud. And so to me, that feels like it's a wonderful day because I just woke up and did that. Now I'm here on the radio with you.
You are, the extroversion in you, it just came to mind, and I'm just going to say it out loud.
I'm just telling you, this is my thought this morning.
Right, so as an introverted guy, that thought would have been stewing in my mind, and I would have thought of 48 reasons. Should
not
I
to
say
tell that to the listening
audience.
Should
I not
audience.
Say that or whatever? Okay. And you're like, you know what?
I'm just going to tell
you. I just needed to say that out loud this morning.
I always have been. My mom said that long before I was a Christian, I was an evangelist. Because I'm like, you've got to try this ice cream. It's the best ice cream ever.
Yeah.
And you have to see my
it's
favorite
It's just part
movie
of your nature just to
just share the things I like, Mike. Yeah. My own good news. So I'm telling you, my own good news is get on that website, followtherabbi.com.
Yes, there you go. Well, as a sort of a warning, I guess, we're kind of going to move in every once in a while, every once in a while, we have a kind of a segment that's more PG-13, perhaps.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we know that we're on Family Talk, XM 131, and people might be driving around with their kids or listening to their kids. This might be, if you have younger kids, this might not be a kind of topic that you wanted to listen to, and I never want to encourage people to turn off the show.
I mean, no, we're just saying.
But we're just saying
download it later as a podcast.
There you go. You might want to just set it aside. Mary Frances Bowley is with us. She runs. I think she's just the chief honcho of Wellspring Living. She serves 100 women and girls annually. Nearly 400 of them have graduated from the different programs that Wellspring Living offers. She's written a book called White Umbrella. And it's a
Save
book.
Say the subtitle.
It's a book about sexual trafficking.
Yes.
Basically, and so it's a difficult topic, but it's one that the church seems to be responding to.
That's exactly.
And this book is another example of someone kind of giving a voice to that subject. So Mary Frances, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I what's so interesting, the one thing we love about having people on is that we want to get a story behind the story. And so, in reading about your background, you were a wife and your mom. You lived in what you call the Gulf capital of the South.
Yeah.
So how does a wife and a mom from the Gulf capital of the South, Peachtree City, Georgia, write a book and get involved in the story of girls in the United States being involved in sexual exploitation?
Well, it certainly wasn't on my plan. My career plan was I was going to be a kindergarten teacher all my life, but God had a different plan for me, obviously. So I had been teaching school and stepped away from
like
that
it.
For a while. Yeah, so I stepped away from it for a while, and then as I connected with a lot of women around Metro Atlanta for a large event, recognized that there was a huge disparity between women who had hope and in the church and those who didn't. And in the process of getting to know these young women, our group of people who put together this large event decided we were going to do something. And we started out by just trying to help local nonprofits and ended up opening a home for young women at that point, 18 and up, who were at the end of everything. They had no hope. They were in a lot of despair and had a lot of destructive things happen in their life, and it was a chance for them to rebuild their life. And so began to do that back in 2001. And, I had been in the church, led Bible studies. I grew up in the church, but yet I've never seen transformation like what I saw in the young ladies that came into the doors of Wellspring Living. And it wrecked me when I knew their stories and I knew that they didn't choose for their life to be this way. Somebody else had done this to them. And we, as people of faith, have got to be a part of restoration. That's what God calls us to be and do. He says, we're to be his ambassadors. That's as if he was actually doing the work. And so it was a strong call on our lives. And we just We just went after it with all our heart, soul, and mind and following God. And he actually created this program from nothing. And so it was one that addresses the whole person. In other words, we want to be sure they're healthy in their body. We want the wounds of all the things that have happened to them to be healed. So we have professional counseling that's involved with it. And we know that true healing comes through God. And so absolutely there's a spiritual aspect. But doing a program that was very structured and had goals and objectives for their lives to be different, we saw young ladies, young girls who were at the end of themselves, had maybe tried to commit suicide, but within, you know, the time of finishing the program, they're on into college and they're getting married, they're having children, they're reuniting with their family. It was just one miracle after another. And in 2007, Mayor Franklin, who was the mayor of Atlanta at that time, said to me, "I know what you're doing for women, but we need your help for the girls that are being bought and sold in the streets of Atlanta." And that was not on my bucket list at all. I didn't have no clue. I had no clue.
That's another further step away from being a teacher.
It was, yeah. And so, you know, and children have my heart anyway. And at first I was like, well, we'll just consult. We can't really do anything. But boy, as I began to understand the truth and the horrors of what happens to young girls as early as age 12, being lured into this horrible thing called trafficking and exploitation, I couldn't just not do something. And so we worked together as an organization and opened a home for young girls ages 12 to 17 in 2008 and have been serving them ever since. And that's the backstory of why there is a White Umbrella book, because it was obvious that there's a great need for this to happen all across the United States, because we know that there are at least 100,000 children that are exploited annually in the United States. This is not Thailand. This is the United States, our backyard, and so we have to address it. And the book is a way that we can help bring attention to it and also say, the church, you can be a part of this. You can open your, figuratively, your white umbrella and make a difference.
I was just going to ask you, I enjoyed reading the explanation of why the book was titled White Umbrella. Could you explain a little bit where that title comes from and what that principle means to you?
Absolutely. So, you know, all of us, when we were in the middle of a storm in Atlanta over the last last few weeks, we have had so much rain.
Yeah.
You need an umbrella when you're in the middle of a storm. Mm-hmm. And the girls that we serve have been in the worst storms of their life. In fact, the storms are so horrid that they don't even have an umbrella and they don't even know what to do. It takes someone who cares to open their figuratively white umbrella over the girl or even an organization. And what that involves is that you are trying to restore their innocence. That's the coloring for white, and the umbrella is protection. And we need to go where they are. They're in the middle of the storm. We go to them. We walk with them, and we know that they're not going to walk perfectly, and things are not going to be beautiful. And walking through in a rainstorm, you're going to get wet, and you're probably going to get muddy on your feet. But it's so worth it to see a young girl's life be transformed. And so the book was written, The White Umbrella, to encourage all of us, because everyone has something to give. I think the first thing I learned when I got involved in this is it's so overwhelming, the statistics, that we just like throw up our hands and like, well, what can I do? It's too hard. But the reality is if all of us do something, there's going to be a huge change.
Yeah. Are you able to join us after the break?
Sure.
Oh, that would be fabulous. We're talking to Mary Frances Boley about her book, White Umbrella, Walking with Survivors of Sex Trafficking. And we talked real briefly about what about the subtitle. I love the fact that the subtitle talks about it, connecting with, walking alongside.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, you can tell just from talking to Mary Frances, that's really her heart for that. So we're going to be back in about 60 seconds. We're going to talk more about this. We're going to continue sort of this PG-13 conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an important one. And Mary Frances, when we come back, I really want to talk a little bit about sort of making this story a personal story about, you know, these are real people. These are real girls. I want to talk about that when we get back. So, hey, this is Real Life with Beth and Rob. And we hope you're having a great Saturday. But even so, we hope you'll come back in 60 seconds. See you then.
Who's Weaving Your Story? The Story Weaver series by Beth Guckenberger highlights the plight of orphans throughout the world in personal, heart-grabbing stories of loss, struggle, and redemption. The kind of redemption only God, the great story weaver, can accomplish. Written for ages 8 and up, Tales of the Not Forgotten and Tales of the Defended Ones reveal God's ability to create a story far greater than we can imagine. And the corresponding 6-part Leader's Guides on CD help turn each book's content into a simple yet powerful 6-week curriculum for any church or small group. Use both together and you have a 12-week curriculum full of fun activities, compelling stories, biblical teaching, and practical applications. Let God weave your story and see what He can accomplish for orphans worldwide. The Story Weaver series is published by Standard Publishing and is available at www.standardpub.com or your favorite Christian bookstore.
Hey, welcome back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. We hope you're having a fabulous Saturday morning wherever you happen to be today. You know, we're having a PG-13 conversation.
It's okay.
But it is okay. You know, sometimes if we're not getting a little bit messy, if the church isn't getting a little mud on themselves, they're not getting a scraped knee, if it doesn't get a little messy, I'm not sure that we're really doing much.
Yep.
So we got to have these conversations. And I'm really glad our guest, Mary Frances Bowley, has written her book, The White Umbrella, Walking with Survivors of Sex Trafficking. It's not a book that comes out of, hey, let me think about this idea. It is really a book about her living this idea. And so welcome back, Mary Frances. Glad to have you on the show.
Thank you.
You know, we talk a lot about, when we talk about orphan care on our show, that's kind of a big topic for us. Beth, as you may or may not know, has lived in Mexico for 16 years, you know, in the mission field working with orphans. We talk about to our listeners about you need to get to know orphans. It's not just 163 million orphans and some statistic. You sort of alluded to that. Sometimes the statistic gets overwhelming. But when you get to know the girls involved, like you have, what is it that the church in general, the people in general, the misconception that people have about sort of, you know, kids involved in sex trafficking as compared to, no, this is a person. What are we missing? What's the misconception?
Well, I think that all of us, I mean, I was that way too until I'd met the first girl. You just think automatically if a person's in that bad of a place, it must partially be their fault. And the reality is that the girls that we serve, before they are even in preschool, many of them have been sexually molested by a family member or a friend. And that sets them up to be vulnerable. And maybe things aren't going well at home, and they're running away. Well, the reality is that sex trafficking, exploitation, is a business, a very big and lucrative business, one that a girl can bring in to their perpetrator $250,000 a year. And so this is not about a girl choosing it. It's about somebody seeing her as a product and finding a way to lure her in and then to use her to make money. And the reality is that they are just vulnerable little girls, and they never had the opportunity to live and grow up like most teenage girls do. And so it's our heart's desire to say, hey, God is able to take anything and anyone, and if we truly believe that as the church, then we're going to provide a way for a person's life to be rebuilt and restored, and that's what we've seen. Young girls who, at the age of 5, I just think of Kelly, and her uncle had molested her, and then she had a situation at home, and by the time she was 16, her boyfriend, who just happened to be 10 years older, said, oh, I can take you away, takes her off to Kansas City, and then the exploitation begins. Wow. And she had no idea. She's thinking that the boyfriend cares for her and loves her. She doesn't have, at that point, she doesn't trust her family, and she doesn't have anybody that's in her life that's going to help her not make that bad choice. And so it really wasn't a choice. He lured her in and then began to sell her. And then the process of everything that's happened to her and the rebuilding of her life is hard, and it's expensive, but it's so worth it, because now this sweet little girl is now a young mom. She's got a little girl, and she's married, and she's a good friend. But that life would not be changed if there wasn't a way that someone could have intervened in her life. And so I just want people to know they're really just little girls who need the chance to become innocent again and to find God and to know that He is good, and that in spite of everything that's happened, He can take it and He can change your life for the good.
You know, one of my one of the very first things you said on this broadcast was that you know that this needs to spread out, that you needed to get this story out to across the country, because it's happening all over, not just in foreign countries, but all over the United States. So one of my questions is, you know, our church, the larger church body, is being sensitized to this issue. There is more and more good, you know, music lyrics and pastors talking about it, and books are coming out like The White Umbrella. And people are learning statistics, like every 27 seconds another child is trafficked in the world. And, but what do you say to the listener who feels the heart cultivating but doesn't have, you know, Wellspring right there in their community that they can go and volunteer in? What's a good first step?
The very first step is to pray. We actually put together a book that's 40 days of prayer, and it's taken the names of God to pray over any child that's being exploited. So prayer is always the first thing I say. The second thing is look around. There are child care agencies, there are teenage youth centers where there's potential for young children who could be vulnerable, that you could intervene in their life by being a mentor or by providing crafts or things that will help them have new direction in their life. And also, if there are people now looking and they feel like, I'm called to do this, we offer a mentorship program to people so that they can figure, they can be guided in the process of opening a place of refuge for young girls and women. And so there's so many ways that you can be involved, but I just say, right where you are, look around. If you see a child that you know looks sad, doesn't look you in the eyes, reach out to them, care for them. Make a plan to support their family if possible, because preventing it is even better. And so I think we all have something we can do. And if there's an organization near you, then don't be afraid to volunteer. I think one of the greatest things we've learned over the last 12 years is volunteers are our greatest asset. And many times it's that volunteer doing something special, maybe a little something, that is the linchpin that turns that child to say, I want my life to be different. And we invite people to walk with us as we walk with survivors, because we believe it takes everybody for that life to be turned around, not just counselors and not just people that care that are on staff, but we really believe the body of Christ needs to be involved in this.
Yeah. Well, Mary Frances, it's an incredibly important story and topic. That's why we talk about it on a regular basis on our show, and you tell it in an incredibly compelling way. And we're so glad that you could make the time to be on the show. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for calling. Take care.
And have a great Saturday.
I will. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Just, you know, compelling stuff. I mean,
it reminded me, you know, several months ago we interviewed Peter Everett, the executive director on the U.S.-based side of Destiny's Rescue.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was talking about how, I won't know the statistics exactly, but the vast majority of runaways are approached the first 24 hours by someone who wishes to exploit them. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking about, you know, how we can go about our day and just have our head down. We got our to-do list, or we got our head on our phone, or we've got our mind in something else, and we're not always even observant. And I don't know if you saw in the news that they've reopened the case of the little girl from England who was kidnapped.
Yeah, I did see that.
In Portugal. And what they're imploring the English state to do is, and the Portugal country, to pay attention, like be aware, they were saying, to the whole British nation, all of the United Kingdom, everyone, have your eyes open for this little girl. This is about what she looks like. And I was just thinking, while our eyes are open.
Yeah, let's look for some other people, too.
Let's just be paying attention to the child that doesn't look you in the eye, that looks like maybe uncomfortable with the adult that they're with, and then risk that social uncomfortability of asking a child, hey, are you all right?
Right. Yeah, and again, we keep coming back to this topic at the risk of having people turn the power button off because they're in a car with kids or doing whatever, but we just can't not talk about it. We just can't do it. And again, what I really appreciate about Mary Frances's book, White Umbrella, is that this isn't the story of a faraway, like she said, this isn't Thailand, this isn't India, this isn't some faraway land where, oh my gosh, what's happening over there? She lives in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Right? And the mayor of Atlanta said, hey, you can help us with girls in our city, 12 to 17 years old, who are being trafficked. Over 100,000 girls in the United States. So this isn't some faraway problem that, hey, I can write a check and forget about it, or read a book and say, oh my gosh, Thailand, what a backward place that must be. This is like at the interstate exchange. This is at the truck stop down the road. This is, you know, in your town. And it's just such a compelling read, a compelling story about how she went from hopeful kindergarten teacher to housing young preteens and teens who are being exploited.
I think, again, finding out and not being afraid, and we've talked many, many times before about, you know, putting into your phone the National Human Trafficking 1-800 number, because if you're afraid, if you think, I think I see something that's uncomfortable, but I have small children with me, or I don't even know what to do, if they'll say, again, that number is 1-888-373-7888.
Yeah.
And just look that thing up, stick it in your phone, so that if you can just give the coordinates. I see some shady thing going down right here. Someone needs to check it out.
And we'll post that up on our Facebook page. So go visit us at Real Life with Beth and Rob. You can visit us at reallifewithbethandrob.com. So a show like this, you know, you may say, wow, something is welling up in me. I need to hand this show off to somebody, or I want to listen to it again. You can hear all of our shows, any of our previous shows, this show in particular, at reallifewithbethrob.com. We have them all archived there. You can go to our Facebook page and find them, or you can go to iTunes and you can listen to them as a podcast there. So don't hesitate. Go and do it. Join several hundred thousand other people who've done it before you.
Absolutely.
And doing that. So, hey, great. I mean, show after show. What?
Good conversation.
This is just our little show.
Inspiring the day.
Week after week after week. Next week is going to be the same. Brian Tome, pastor of Crossroads Church in Cincinnati, one of the largest churches in the United States, is going to join us, along with David Kinneman. He's from the Barna Group. He has written a bestseller, Unchristian. We're going to be talking about that sort of divide between millennials and baby boomers, and you know, how can the church engage young people?
All of them.
Yeah, it's becoming, as we talked about last week, I mean, 60% of people who grew up in the church who would identify themselves as Christian don't want anything to do with the church after they get into their 20s.
And which says more about those of us who are hosting the church than those of them that are leaving.
That's exactly. So we'll talk about that next week.
Amen.
Thanks for another great show, Beth. Thanks for a great Saturday.
Happy Saturday.
Hey, we hope you have a great Saturday, the rest of your day, wherever you happen to be. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob, and we're going to do it next Saturday.
Again and again.
10 o'clock, so join us then.
Come back.
Until then, have a great week.